Hi, this is Lisa. You found me on Empower Radio, and I thank you so much for today choosing to be positive now. Now, before I introduce you to this very special, awesome guest, take a listen to this. We can live lives that are peaceful and filled with joy and be happy with who we are, happy with who we've been, and eager to discover who we are becoming. We can live lives where everything is perfect, just as it is, and we can do it right now. Wow, does that sound awesome? And that came directly out of Traveling at the Speed of Love by its very shiny author, Sonia Choquette. How are you, Sonia?
I'm happy to be with you. I'm great today. Thank you.
You know, now when I read that part out of the book, because this sounds like, you know, a utopia, this whole I'm happy with where I've been, I'm happy with where I am now, and I'm happy with where I'm going. But you think of it a little bit like a parfait, and you're like, smooth and creamy, but I know there's nuts in there or granola somewhere.
Well, and the whole point is, what it is what it is. And whether you're happy about it or unhappy about it doesn't change anything. This is about accepting life's experiences, all of them, with the attitude and the understanding that you're on a spirit, you're on a journey, on a soul journey to learn and grow. And every experience you have has value. Every one. Every experience is important for your soul growth and understanding and becoming a divine being. So it's not that it's all comfortable. It's not that it's all the way you want it. But you can definitely, if you shift from the perspective of looking at life through the lens of ego and look through the lens of spirit, it's all good.
How does someone look through the lens of spirit if they're so used to living their life in fear and denial and anger? How do they look through that lens?
Well, you have to understand that when you're looking that way and through the ego, no matter what you're looking at, even if people are having a positive experience, through the lens of ego, what they're going to hear is, oh, my God, this is going to go away. Oh, my goodness, somebody's going to take it. This isn't going to last. How can I keep it going? So even the positive experience of life, the more comfortable, more joyful and fluid experiences through the lens of the ego cannot be fully embraced. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand that the ego will always be fearful. It will always be controlling. It will always be suspicious. And there's no way around it. When you look at the spirit, you see that life is a continuum of flowing experiences, each one valid, each one coming, and there's no disconnect.
Mm-hmm. That's sometimes a really hard pill to swallow.
It's bigger than that. It's a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
It means that you have to completely shift how you look at yourself in the world. Because if you don't, you will never, ever, ever find a state of peace of mind that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, like I say, when in the speed of love, we all take the same journey. We take our first breath, the journey begins, and with our last breath, the journey ends. It's the quality of the journey that we have influence over. We can go first class, we can go in the back of the bus, or we can go standby and miss the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much a pill to swallow as it's a perspective to consider. What I'm doing, how I'm looking at the world, how I'm interpreting the world is not necessarily the way it is.
Right.
That if I change my interpretation and begin to look from the eyes of spirit that life, we're all connected, we're all having the same journey, and I can get into the flow of life with others, then the quality of the experience will greatly improve without you having to change one single thing in the outer world.
Okay, so how is someone changing their perspective on, let's say someone lost their job and then, you know, they got out of their car, they tripped, they sprained their ankle, their kids are now out of school, they've got to take care of that. How do you turn that into a positive?
Well, what you do is you're not necessarily turning it into a positive as much as you're just accepting this is what is so, but I have a creative opportunity to make choices and use what is so to be able to create something different. If I've lost my job, whether I'm mad about it or not, it's over. Mm-hmm. So now I put my creative consciousness into getting into, not to fall into the trance of scarcity or into the trance of there's not enough, but to recognize that it's time to move into something new. I had this conversation with a woman who was in the Ukraine right when the Iron Curtain fell. Mm-hmm. And she said, I said, how was that? You know, democracy was now coming in to replace communism. And she said it depended. Half of the people were furious and disgusted, and they couldn't stop for 1 minute feeling sorry for themselves and angry that what they knew had changed, what they expected to change. But the other half were overnight instant entrepreneurs. They were creative, they were happy, they kept trying something new, but they were not, even though the circumstances had changed, their creativity didn't stop.
Mm-hmm. Sort of living in a sense of allowing acceptance.
Right, you have to. If your kids are out of school, whether you're mad about it or not, won't put them back in school. So I'm not saying be Pollyanna. I'm saying genuinely accept what is and then recognize your creative perspective can greatly influence how you experience what is. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, years ago, I used to be a flight attendant.
Oh, okay.
And I write about that in the book. Well, the airline that I worked with went out of business, and everybody was laid off. Some of the people were so devastated that they were just, you know, went to drugs, went to drinking. Some even committed suicide.
Whoa.
Others started their own businesses, went on to do other things, including people that were very close to me. And it was really interesting. We were all on the same playing field. We all came from the same background, but what we choose to do with the circumstances was very different. Either people were victims and they were going to be angry and how could you do this to me, which didn't give them their jobs back but made them very unlikely to move on and unattractive to new situations.
Mm-hmm.
And there were others who said, okay, it is what it is. I'm not going to stay here and just suffer it. I'm going to be creative. I have more than one talent. I have more than one option. I am not going to be defined by my circumstances. I will define my circumstances. And we're in the same boat. What's going on today is not new.
Mm-hmm.
The wheel just is turning because the wheel goes up and the wheel goes down. That's the cycles of life.
Mm-hmm. And then the beautiful part about all of this is that you do have a choice.
You have a choice, but you cannot exercise that choice unless you remember, I am spirit. I have creative consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that I am not controlled by external circumstances.
I want to go back for a minute to ego, because recently I saw Sonia at the Celebrate Your Life conference in Chicago, and you just blew me away, had a great time. You were the Saturday morning keynote, and the biggest impression you made on me was when you were comparing your ego to a dog.
You said it was your pet.
I know, but still, the dog thing was awesome.
That is a dog. For some, it can be your cat.
I immediately went to dog because I got to admit I'm a dog girl, Sonia. So that's
good.
Can you explain a little bit about this ego pet thing?
A lot of people are under the impression that ego is bad, spirit is good, so if I'm going to be spiritual, I have to kill my ego. Well, first of all, it's part of your physiology as a human being. It's part of your physical apparatus. And so you're not going to kill it. The best explanation and relationship for ego was said by Einstein. He said the human spirit is a sacred gift. The rational mind, its faithful servant. But sadly, we've thrown away the gift and have become enslaved to the servant.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done is simplify that statement by saying, consider that your ego is your pet. It's the pet that belongs to your spirit. Now, you can either train your pet and you have a wonderful companion for your life who works with spirit, or you can have a wild animal who menaces you and everyone else and just basically makes a mess of your life, terrorizes you, in which case no one enjoys your pet, including you. So it's been a very effective metaphor. First of all, what kind of a pet do you have?
Well, mine was twofold. It was the Labrador Retriever and the German Shepherd.
Yeah, one's patrolling the borders and protecting at all costs, aggressive to adults but kind to children.
Well, and a little bit of that, I need to say that I'm right. I need to prove that I'm smart,
yes,
type of thing.
That's definitely the German Shepherd.
Well, and let me tell you, it happened to me there at that conference shortly after you started talking about this, because for basically I'm a lab, but every once in a while when I feel like I'm not smart enough, I'll have to say something and that German Shepherd comes out. You were talking about yours being a poodle.
Yes.
And you said something about how poodles, you notice they're not used for leader dogs.
They're not used to it for blind people.
Right. Well, here's the funny thing. My little ego comes out because I raised a puppy for leader dogs for the blind, and I volunteer with them, and I know they use poodles. Why I felt the need to turn to my friend and say, well, actually, they do use poodles. Hello, German Shepherd comes out. Who cares? Why? I mean, that wasn't important, and that was that side of my ego that had to say, oh, well, really? I'm going to say that I know this and I'm a smart person. So it just brought it clearly into light to me about the difference between my lab and my German Shepherd sides.
And the part, well, and the information I got from about the poodles was someone who raised, who had a whole family for generations. So maybe that particular family made that choice to say we don't use poodles.
Right, right.
But the point is, that's what the ego will do. It'll miss the point.
Yes, I totally missed the point in that second.
It'll miss the point to be right, and then you get to be isolated.
Yes, yes.
And so there's no flow. All of a sudden, you're by yourself. You're defending a point, and you're not in flow, and it's me against you. And that is the battle of life that exhausts, ages all of us, and blows up our planet.
It just, it was so wonderful that it happened to me in that moment so I could really experience what that felt like. And you know, I had to sort of go, yeah, wow, Lisa, you really didn't need to do that. And, you know, and move on. That's the beautiful part of it. We're talking with Sonia Choquette, who wrote Traveling at the Speed of Love. Tell us how this all came about, because I think it's actually a cool story, the name of the book and all of that.
I am a traveler. I am a gypsy at heart, but with my work, I travel extensively. And so one day I was in London, and I got a phone call from my sister who said, you know, where are you? And I said, I'm in London. And she said, well, your guides can't get a hold of you. So they came and they got me while I was doing a session, a healing session, and they told me to call you and tell you the name of your book. Next book is Traveling at the Speed of Love. And I was traveling, racing through London Airport to catch my flight because it's like a football field away from security. Uh-huh. And I started laughing and said, well, that sounds like a really good title. Okay. And at the time, I accepted because that's how life works for me. If I get a message from spirit, however it comes, that's the way it comes.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't really sure what that book was going to be about. I sat with it for a little bit, but shortly thereafter, quite unexpectedly, my brother, who was a year older than me and very healthy, died in his sleep from a blockage to his heart.
Whoa.
And 6 weeks later, my father, who had never seen a doctor in his life, was never sick a day in his life, died suddenly, and we're sure he died of grief.
Mm.
So, bam, bam. I just had first, it's like a train wreck for me personally, for my family, and I realized then that that's what this book was to be about. Mm. That we assume when we get up in our daily dramas that the journey is forever. So it's like being in Paris and you miss the gardens because you're haggling with someone over the price of a scone for 4 days. And then you're out of there.
And
you miss life. So that's what this book, it became evident to me shortly after those experiences, that it was about don't miss the journey.
And you actually
suffer the journey.
Dealt with some of your own physical problems at the same time?
Oh, yes. I have, through just in the whole course of the year, it was just one of the most difficult years. Back pain and my dog was dying of cancer, and my brother died, and my dad died, and my mom, who had been married to my father since she was 15 and who's deaf and depended on my father and my brother completely to function in life, fell apart. It was a train wreck. My husband's mother and father were in a car accident and in a nursing home and on ventilators, and it just seemed like it was a circus of disaster.
Oh, my gosh.
When I wrote this book.
Yeah, let's talk about having to slow your flow there and really take a look at your life.
Really take a look at, well, this isn't going away. This book wasn't written in ideal conditions. It was written in the worst year of my life. The worst, most painful year of my life. Even my daughters, whom I adore, both moved away. Went to L.A., went to Portland. I mean, it was just like the worst year of my life. And then I decided, or not.
Wow.
Just is what it is.
And as I'm reading this book, I'm definitely getting that Phoenix quality out of it. Because it does feel like that and make me look at my own life about, you know, where am I ready to push forward and push through. Sonia, you are a spiritual teacher and intuitive advisor as well. And for, you know, myself and for you, it's very common. And we say, oh, I speak to my guides. I listen to my guides. For somebody who's new to this whole concept of guides, what's the easiest way to connect, to connect with source and connect with spirit and your guides?
That's a very good question, and different cultures have different vernacular for the same thing. For example, in the Asian world, it's our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we connect, and we also see that in South America and in the Central America, that they, you know, the Day of the Dead, and we talk to our beloved past. And if you're Catholic, you have your saints and your angels, and you have angels in every tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we've all been introduced to the idea that life lives on, and that consciousness beyond the physical exists, and that consciousness can influence us because it's connected to us. And one of the ways I like to suggest that we can talk to guides is, you know how you and I are speaking? We're on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see each other. We're not in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
But we're connected to through a frequency. And when it comes to speaking with guides, you connect to a frequency that's centered in the heart, the
mm-hmm.
heart space,
mm-hmm.
where you feel and can open yourself to the wisdom and the consciousness, because even physics affirms that energy is never lost, it just changes form.
Yeah.
So the consciousness of those who have gone before and have changed from physical form to pure energy form
mm-hmm.
are still connected to us. You know, there's genetic tests now that can tell you your DNA and your ancestors back to BC times.
Wow.
I did it.
Oh, you did?
I was curious.
What did you find out?
My relatives go back to the Sudan. So it just, there's that consciousness of all the learned that's gone before us. It's available. And so when you're connecting with your guides, you're connecting to the consciousness. It's sort of like the internet of the energetic realm.
Mm-hmm.
It's all there.
It's right there for the talking.
It's all there.
It's there for the talking, as I like
it's
to say.
There for, yeah, it's there for it to be of service if you choose to open to it.
A lot of times people, they'll say, oh, well, I'm sure they're too busy to help me, which
that's
always makes me laugh.
Self-esteem. And that's also linear thinking. Because if you think about guides like the internet isn't, It's the information of the quantum field is there for you to access,
mm-hmm.
and you go to a website, you're there. So it's not like people are up there in the sky picking and choosing who's worthy. That's just an overlay of our self-esteem and our experience on Earth of the human support because the human levels of support have been very reward-based. If you do what I say, I'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
If you do what I want or you follow these rules, then maybe I'll help you or you pay this price. But that's not how it works in the spirit realm.
Mm-hmm.
I think the closest, and I actually think the internet is a very good reflection of the spirit realm.
Right.
There's all this information just there, all this insight, all this wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And when you open the heart and go to the heart space and you ask for guidance relative to certain experiences, certain challenges, you can access the guidance and it's available to you.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to do it wrong. Everybody, you know, some people say, oh, well, I don't know how to do it. Well, you know how to have a conversation. That's all that it is.
You know whether something feels right or wrong to you.
Exactly. Absolutely. When did you first know that you had abilities? And do we all have them?
We all have them, and I never realized I had abilities. It
okay.
was like, in my particular case, it's like asking me, when did I first notice that I could see? But I did notice when I started school, second grade, definitely by third grade, that what I could see, not everybody could see.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit of a point of confusion. But I realized that wasn't the case in kindergarten. Everybody could see.
Mm-hmm.
And first grade, still. So I realized that we all start out with the wisdom to see and be connected to the spirit realm. And we are conditioned to go unconscious. We're conditioned to disconnect. We get distracted by the external world. We get pulled away from our spirit and pulled into our authority figures and those around us, and we get mesmerized by their perspective and lose touch with our own. But fortunately, that can be corrected very quickly with just a little attention.
Attention to the actual feeling of it? Or
yeah, to okay. your authentic self, because intuition is also a reflection of your most authentic self. So you just remember, does this feel true? Not is this right or wrong, which really is a reflection of winning other people's approval, but does this feel true for me in this moment?
Right.
That is the question that should guide your decisions. Does this feel right in my bones
mm-hmm.
for me with no one else looking in this moment?
Do you?
That's how you access intuition.
Do you speak with your father and your brother?
I do, in fact. It's funny you would ask. This morning I was on the internet just sending an email to my mom, and I turned and I could sense my dad. I was like, hi, Dad. Hi. I was happy.
Oh.
I find myself saying hi to my dad and my brother spontaneously a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like, it's all of a sudden, it's like if someone walked in the room and you go, oh, hi. That's how it is. For me, with my dad and my brother, and other guides in my life, and other beautiful beloveds that have transitioned into spirit, I'm very clear, and I feel them very much all the time, and I feel so happy. It's like when you see someone you really love, and you run into them spontaneously. Your heart goes hi. That's how it feels.
It you know, and it does. And a lot of times, people, you know, they'll say, "Well, I feel a little strange about it." I say, think about it this way: if you walked into a party and there's all these people and everybody ignored you, I said, wouldn't that feel odd to you that no one was paying attention or saying at least hello to you? And that's how I like to think of it. So when I walk
that's
into my...
That's a good point. I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, just say hello. It's as simple as starting that way. You would if you walked into a crowded room and you were meeting new people, you'd say hello. And just because we can't see them doesn't mean that they're not there waiting for our hello in the morning or when you get in the car or when you're at work.
That's a beautiful, beautiful analogy to help people connect to their guides.
Thank you.
And, you know, there's this thing... There's Kirlian photography, and then there's also this other type of photography where they take pictures and you see all these bright, energetic orbs.
Oh, yes, yes.
That's your spirit guides. The human eye can't register them, but there's even more sensitive filters, sensitive eyes in these cameras that can actually verify that you're not there all by yourself.
And it's so cool when you actually can feel the energy. I mean, we emit energy. Everything has energy. And when you can run your hand by something and feel a little bit of buzzing or tingling, it's so cool. It's like someone tickling you almost.
Right. It is. It's just fantastic.
I love it. We've got Sonia Choquette. She is author of Traveling at the Speed of Love. And one of the best sections that I think people can really take a lot from. Please, please speak a little bit about fear.
Well, I think that people really need to know that fear is part of the human condition. And so it's not like you'll travel at the speed of love when you're not afraid. Mm-hmm. But what causes our lives to derail is not that we feel fear, but that we hide that we're feeling fear. And when you can acknowledge that you're feeling fear and put your light of attention and awareness on it, something pretty crazy shifts. It shrinks.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer an internalized force that you're trying to contain. You externalize it, you can look at it, and then again you have a choice. Well, am I feeling fear because I'm in danger? Most of the time, not.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the time, yes. In which case, it's time to make a different choice so that I can remove myself from the danger. But often, if you feel fear and you don't acknowledge it, you'll walk right into the danger.
Mm-hmm.
So my tool, and it works brilliantly, 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 is the minute you feel fear, say so, and out loud. Mm-hmm. I feel fear. I feel uncomfortable. I feel challenged. I feel threatened. And then start just acknowledging why.
Mm-hmm.
What's up? What's going on? And what will happen is, if it's not legitimate fear, it evaporates. If it is legitimate fear, you access intuition, which will then begin to give you guidance and direction
on how to move through it.
About how to remove yourself
mm-hmm.
from it. But what doesn't work is to keep it internalized, hide it, don't verbalize it, don't say something. Then it controls you.
You say in the book, the greatest reason we find ourselves ambushed by fear is that we do not want to be fully accountable for our choices and actions in life. Instead, we prefer to pretend we have no choice, that life happens to us.
Right.
And a lot of people feel that way.
And our biggest fear is the fear of our own power of running our own life.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you think it's easier if I just sit back and everybody tells me what to do and then I just, you know, methodically move through it.
And that way, if it doesn't work out, there's someone to blame.
That is so true.
That is the biggest point. It's like, well, if I don't make a decision and if I don't take responsibility, then I don't have to be in charge and look at myself in life.
Mm-hmm. So
this is really, really, really what keeps people from being empowered. But here's the interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are over. Those days of wanting, you know, we did have a society. We did have a cultural consciousness that would give us our directions, our bosses, our parents, our companies, whatever. And then in our compliance, we were sort of guaranteed we would be taken care of.
Hmm.
Well, that's long over.
Hmm.
All those systems have collapsed,
mm-hmm.
absolutely collapsed. So we have to recognize that we can either give our power away and hope someone will save us, or we can own it. But if we give it away, you might as well throw your wallet and your keys out the window in downtown Chicago and open your doors and windows and turn your car over to someone, because you know what? People will come, use you up, and move on.
And especially during this time of transition, what's the deal with the whole 2012 craziness?
That's a good question. I think 2012 marks the end of the era of oppression and the beginning of the era of personal responsibility. We are learning that we are divine beings and we do create our own reality. And for some of us, that is the most horrifying news. So it is the end of unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It It is the end of victimhood. And for those who subscribe and who are invested in victimhood and giving their power away, it is the end of their safety. It is the end of their illusions. It is the end of their sense of why is this happening to me? And that is going to be a chaotic shift. But it is the beginning of liberation. And so for some, it's very disturbing. And for others, it's like, let the good times roll.
Mm-hmm.
We are in a paradigm shift. And it means that we can no longer subscribe to these perceptions that of victimhood, because there's no one there that's going to be there to take care of us.
And the good news is that you do have the strength within you. It is,
and the resources in the spirit realm to assist you.
Amen. Yes, absolutely.
But you're not alone. It's just that you can't. The first commandment is not to have false gods. Mm-hmm. And that means don't look to others to save your life. You take responsibility and co-create with the universe. And start looking at what you are creating and taking responsibility for it. And learn. Learn. Be willing to simply learn to do your to create a little bit more effectively.
That is just, I personally am very excited about 2012. I hope everybody else is. And they're ready to take that, you know, that step into being who they truly are and living their truth. It's a great place to be. Sonya, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much. All my love.
All right. Thank you so much. Sonya wrote Traveling at the Speed of Love. You can also find out all kinds of information about her at trustyourvibes.com. And let me just leave you with this out of her book, Traveling at the Speed of Love. We are journeying on earth to experience life, not just to purchase or accumulate stuff. To travel at the speed of love focuses on the experience you choose to create now, and you will catch a wave of love that will carry you there. Thanks, everybody, for choosing to be positive now.